Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, the 23rd of May. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, in Bonn, Germany. In today's edition, Kenya's opposition vows to continue demonstrations till the electoral body is disbanded.
For us, the struggle continues. On Monday, the 23rd May 2016,
are all people who are injured. We are not just going to look forward to prosecutions. We are going to sue the state for the injuries.
Boko Haram returnees face discrimination and rejection by their own community and families.
People believe that they have been brainwashed to harm others too. In fact, just a week ago, we received some visitors from such a situation, but sincerely, nobody slept the first night they were here because we felt so unsecured sleeping with them in the same room.
Those stories and crime fighters coming up shortly. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We start in Kenya, where the opposition has vowed to carry on demonstrations calling for the disbandment of Kenya's electoral body, the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. Led by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, opposition leaders spent a bigger part of the weekend calling on their supporters to turn up in big numbers for today's protest. They claim that the electoral body plans to aid President Uhuru Kenyatta in rigging next year's elections. Last week, demonstrations turned violent, leaving several people injured while others were arrested. The protests have now entered their fourth week, and as Andrew Wasiki reports, there seems to be no end in sight.
James Orengo, a Kenyan senator with CORD, threatened to take action against the government for using excessive force when dispersing protesters.
For us, the struggle continues. On Monday, the 23rd May 2016,
are all people who are injured. We are not just going to look forward to prosecutions. We are going to sue the state for the injuries.
Deputy opposition leader Kalonzo Musyoka, also the country's former vice president, also maintained that demonstrations will continue every Monday until the Kenyan government agrees to address their grievances.
What we are saying is we want to call this nation to serious dialogue. And dialogue can never be harmful to a person who wields executive authority over the affairs of this nation. Some of us, young as we are, old as we are, will continue to sit there until we call the people of this great nation to reason.
Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto hit hard at the opposition over the protests, accusing them of attempting to destabilize the country.
The demonstrations which lead to violence in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, will not bring any change to Kenya's electoral body, the IEBC. The demonstrations will only lead to destruction and division among Kenyans. They will bring death and Kenyans will spill innocent blood. This will be of no use to any Kenyan.
Breaking his silence over the IEBC saga, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has also asked the opposition to respect the Kenyan constitution.
Demonstration does not mean you carry stones in your pocket. Demonstration or protest does not mean that you go and loot shops and interfere with other people going about their business. Constitutions are not documents that are made for convenience. Constitutions are binding documents.
Political analyst Ambrose Weda agrees with President Kenyatta that CORD officials should use the law of the land to eject IEBC commissioners. Weda says that the credibility of the IEBC commissioners has been tarnished as members of the opposition have learned that President Kenyatta played a major role in selecting the panel that selected the commissioners.
It is like CORD supporters believe that Raila and State House, only IEBC is standing in between. With that credibility spent, it cannot be any election that will be considered free and fair. Not because the IEBC people have done anything wrong or can do anything wrong, but because they are referees. The only way out for them is get out. And that is inevitable. The way the CORD is doing it is the wrong way. They should just follow the due process.
Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. Let's now turn to Wanjiku Mwaura and Oli Tangen Jr. for a fact box on Kenya Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
The Coalition for Reforms and Democracy, CORD, was formed months before the 2013 general elections in Kenya. It brought together the Orange Democratic Movement, the Wiper Democratic Party, and Ford Kenya, among others. It was created to provide a stronger front for their presidential candidate in a bid to run against the Jubilee coalition. They have been leading countrywide protests calling for reforms in the Electoral Commission before the 2017 general elections.
The protests have been escalating, and last week the police were caught on camera using excessive force on protesters. The opposition claims that the Electoral Commission is incompetent and corrupt. They have vowed to continue with the protests every Monday until they are heard.
The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, which is at the center of the protests, was founded in 2011 under the new Kenyan constitution. It is responsible for conducting and supervising referenda and elections to any elective body or office established by the constitution.
The opposition leader Raila Odinga claims that the commissioners of IEBC lack the impartiality to adjudicate an electoral contest between Jubilee and the opposition. After the 2013 elections, the opposition had contested the presidential elections to the Supreme Court, which ruled that Uhuru Kenyatta was the rightful winner. Since then, the opposition party has been pushing for the disbandment of the commissioners of the electoral body.
The IEBC commissioners enjoy security of tenure and can be removed from office only for serious violation of the constitution or any other law, including gross misconduct, physical or mental incapacity to perform the functions of office, incompetence, or bankruptcy. The IEBC has been implicated in two major scandals since its formation, leading to a loss in public confidence.
The other legal channel that the opposition could pursue in this matter would be to take a petition to Parliament. But they are saying that the Jubilee government has a majority of the seats and thus would prevent the petition from being passed. They are adamant that the protests will continue since this is the only way that they will be heard.
Wanjiku Maura and Oli Tangen Jr. with that fact box on the Kenya Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Life can be so unfair. As if being under Boko Haram captivity was not bad enough, the victims who have been rescued by the Nigerian military are now faced with yet another torment, discrimination. These thousands of women and children are not welcome in their own communities. Not even their families want them. DW's Mohammed Alamin reports that there is growing fear that they could have been radicalized, hence could be a danger to society.
Freed Nigerian women that had previously been captured by Boko Harams are being rejected by their family and community members due to fear that some of these girls and women were radicalized in captivity. The women and girls, many of whom were raped by militants, have been labeled Annoba in Hausa language, which means epidemic or Boko Haram wives. Some community members worried that the freed women and children might try to recruit others to fight with the militants group, which has been terrorizing northern Nigeria for more than 6 years. Yagana Kyari told me why there is fear in accepting the returnees into their own families.
People believe that they have been brainwashed to harm others too. In fact, just a week ago, we received some visitors from such a situation, but sincerely, nobody slept the first night they were here because we felt so unsecured sleeping with them in the same roof. And they are people we trust. They are family. Before they were in such a calamity, we trust them.
Nasir Abbas is the Secretary General Civil Society Congress, call on the media and the society in general to stop circulating pictures of freed women and children as a way of reducing stigmatization and rejection.
We are calling on the media outfit, particularly the print and electronic media, to see to it that by the time they showcase these girls, they make sure that they give a blurred vision of their faces in order to safeguard them from the larger society. The people at large should also embrace them. They should not be seen to be considered as outcasts. They are part and parcel of us.
Comrade Ramatu Tijani, Director Peace Revival Foundation, a civil society organization based in Kaduna, northern Nigeria, called on Nigerian government to, as a matter of urgency, provide guidance and counseling for the returnees.
All they need to do, giving these children guidance and counseling, training them, putting them into workshop, skill acquisition and whatsoever could likely help the children in order not to have any other psychological effect or whatever within the community they find themselves.
As many of these women and children, as well as their newly born babies, face discrimination and rejection by family and community, some describe the situation as unintended consequences of the military's generally successful push to liberate mile-up territories that Boko Haram's had held for months.
A very touchy report there by Mohamed Alamin. Now, peace talks aimed at solving Burundi's long-year crisis are underway in Arusha, Tanzania. The talks have brought together Burundian government officials, diplomats and civil society representatives, but a key opposition umbrella group, CNARED, was not invited. The criteria on how delegates were chosen remains unclear, but former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, who is the chief mediator, said he would give ample time and space to all stakeholders to express their views on the way forward. Charles Ngereza reports.
Former Tanzania President Benjamin Mkapa insists that the Burundi problem should be solved by the Burundians themselves. Mkapa, who is the chief mediator in the talks, said he would use this time to understand the core of the crisis and to set out a plan for future meetings.
My intention, if we have the will and understanding of the Burundi, is to conduct these talks in a sustained manner so that a solution is found, so as to ensure the return to peace and harmony and development in Burundi. We are aware that this is a Burundi problem and it can only be solved by the Burundi themselves. My role is only to facilitate the Burundi dialogue and reach an amicable solution.
Leonard Nyangoma, chairman of CNDD, opposition party in Burundi, says he is hopeful that the mediator will give them an opportunity to be heard.
You know, to negotiate seriously, we need to have a minimum of confidence. I hope also in Versailles they have confidence on us.
This optimism is shared by the EU ambassador to Tanzania, Roland De Geer, who said the international community believes in the facilitator to create a roadmap to attain peace in Burundi.
Former President Mkapa of Tanzania is a highly respected international leader. He is respected in the region. He is the best to resolve this problem. So we share ourselves around him and we are optimistic.
However, women organizations attending the talks are of the opinion that peace talks should have taken place in Burundi to give the population a chance to voice their views on how best the crisis should be solved.
It's good that we come here in Arusha, but it would be better if we can do this in Burundi. Many people will say what they want, what they need, but here you see how many are we? All those who have been invited, they have not come. Women are suffering because they are the ones who are mainly operating for development. Even if you see rural women, they are the ones who are going to farms.
The big solutions are in Burundi. Who will come to see us in Burundi and to discuss, to see the reality of Burundi. You will go to see the population in their home. They will tell you the truth, but not here. I think that is one step of dialogue. I think that the other steps will be in Burundi.
Charles Ngereza in Arusha, Tanzania. And once again, let's learn something about drugs to cure and drugs to kill. Crime Fighters is up next.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, it's time for Crime Fighters, Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill, by Mukoma Wangugi. This is the sixth episode, entitled Coming Undone. Last time, the detectives Kalumba and Salamisha lost their colleague Chokbank during a shootout in Mary Jane's pharmacy. It also turned out that Mary Jane was the girlfriend of Peter, the young man whose murder sparked the investigation. Mary Jane told the detectives that Peter was trying to identify the people behind the counterfeit medicine ring. She hinted that they should look into the Ministry of Health.
Mary Jane, I believed her. We came to her with pieces of the case and she put them together to make a roadmap through the many corridors of power and money. The next day, Salamisha and I met in the car park outside the police station.
Hey Kalumba, how are you holding up?
I'm okay, but I want to wrap this case up before we bury Chokbank. I want him to rest with justice served.
Then let's do it. I suggest we start with Dr. Kamkuta and his brother. I've just heard that Malinya's woken up in hospital. Come on, I'll drive.
Some good news at last.
Bad news for him.
I always knew we'd come back to the brothers. Too much had been happening around them for them to be completely innocent. What we didn't know was the extent to which either brother was involved. Millions of Kitagu shillings were being made by people preying on the sick and desperate. And we were starting to lose patience. Malinya, of course, was under guard, not only because he was a suspect in a major drug and medicine trafficking case, but also because he was Kamkuta's brother. At the hospital, we showed our badges and we were let into his room. Malinya, you have to talk. Otherwise, we'll stop protecting you. And how long do you think you'll stay alive then?
Detective, it's all coming back to me now. I promised I'll tell you everything, didn't I?
Where are they? Detectives, you have no right to be here without my permission. This is harassment. My brother is very sick.
No, Kamkuta, my brother, please. It's over. You don't have to protect me anymore. I'm only alive because of these detectives. We have to give them what they want. It's time to tell the truth.
Very well. Listen, detectives. If we tell you what we know, what will we get in return?
Give us a name and we'll see.
The Minister of Health. He's the person you're looking for.
Finally, we were climbing up the ladder, getting closer to the powers behind the drug trade. The question was, knowing all that we knew already, did Salamisha and I really want to get so close to the truth? The people we were dealing with were completely callous. They traded in death, taking advantage of the sick, even the terminally ill, selling them fake medicines. How do you arrest a power so great it has a minister caught between a rock and hard place? But Chokbank, they'd killed him. They'd poisoned Peter and then they'd gone on killing. And then they would kill thousands more with their fake medicines and keep on raking in millions of dollars. Maybe Salamisha and I alone couldn't stop them, but we had to try.
Come on in, detectives. My secretary says you have urgent news. How may I help you?
Very easily, Minister. Fake drugs, counterfeit medicines. Tell us everything now. And we might allow you to turn state witness. That's as good as it's going to get for you.
Listen, my friends. One phone call. One phone call is all it takes. And it'll be me allowing you to turn state witness.
Come on, Minister. You knew it was over the moment we walked through that door. What's it going to be? The truth or jail? I only had to take one look at him to know that the Minister of Health would tell us everything. It was the look of a middleman caught with his hand in the pharmaceutical cookie jar. I could just see the calculations running through his mind. Middlemen are only brave until they are caught. The worst thing for them I'd learned over the years was that middlemen actually have a conscience. Otherwise, they'd commit the crime themselves or wait at the end to claim their profit. Middlemen are stuck in the middle because they believe they can change the outcome for the better. The Minister of Health struck me as one of these. He'd start off making empty threats and end up telling us everything we wanted to know. It was time to get him talking.
Sir, you know why we're here. You yourself are a trained doctor. I'm sure you don't want to see innocent people dying because fake medicines have given them false hope.
Listen, detectives. As the Minister of Health, of course I know the kind of thing that goes on. We get reports all the time about people suffering because they've taken fake medicine. In fact, we've just arrested some medicine men who'd been selling false hopes.
You know how this ends, right? You've seen it many times before. Every time there's a scandal. Cabinet reshuffle. And then a reshuffled minister disappears. And a year or two later, they're nowhere to be found. You and I, we know what happens. They get disappeared.
You want the truth, you say? For that to work, you would need to know more than I do.
How about we just have a conversation? Listen, you live in the shadows, you'll die in the shadows. The only thing that can turn your dangerous night into day is telling the truth. Shine a light on them, minister. Expose them. That's how you'll win your freedom.
I don't believe you'd have let us in if you didn't want to do this.
All right. I'll tell you. But for just one reason. If you don't make it right, then you and I will all be dead by the end of tomorrow. You have to understand, what you're dealing with is the very essence of power.
But power isn't an essence. It's always a person. Someone's finger is pushing the terrible buttons. Whoever it is, stop hiding behind them. Tell us now.
Baba Peter, he killed his son.
How do you know?
Because I am the Minister of Health. And Baba Peter is my handler. We operate like terrorist cells. He tells me when to order the fake medicine for the national hospitals. At first, he told me they were cheap generic drugs, that he'd made a good deal, and we could cream off a lot of money while still doing good. I wanted there to be cheaper medications for the sick. By the time I discovered they were all fake, it was too late. I'd made enough money out of the scam to end up in jail.
So you still have a conscience?
I am a doctor. The people under my care are supposed to get better, not die. Look, I kept a log, just in case. A kind of security. Here's everything you need on Baba Peter. Here, take it. For all our sakes, I hope you get to the truth fast enough. Because if you don't, we are all dead.
You said that already.
When they come for you, there'll be no second chance. You know why the rich are the rich, and the powerful the powerful?
Tell us.
When I am president, my friends, I'll tell you.
I don't believe you're doing this to solve your conscience. You think we can help you bring everyone else down, leaving only you standing?
Well, detective, I am a politician after all. But if you finish this, I guarantee you'll have good jobs, safety, even promotions.
Unlike you, minister, we're not politicians. We swore an oath and we intend to keep it. That's all.
The detectives are making headway. But was it really Baba Peter who killed his own son? Be sure to join us next time to find out more. In the meantime, you can listen to this in all the previous episodes again at dw.com/crimefighters or on Facebook. Bye-bye.
And with that, we come to the end of today's program. But before we leave, here is a recap of our main stories. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has broken his silence about opposition protests, calling them to use illegal means, but the opposition has vowed to carry on with the demonstrations till the electoral body is disbanded. In Nigeria, it's double tragedy as rescued Boko Haram victims suffer rejection and discrimination by their own community. Remember, we welcome your opinion on this program. Please send us your comment via text message to country code 49160-957-5950. You can also send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink DW53110 Bonn, Germany. And tomorrow I shall be here again with another exciting version of AfricaLink. For now, have a nice day, and to my production team plus our lovely technician Michelle, thank you for a job well done.